And now, get ready, folks. It's time for Banter with Bob Sherwood and Dan Snell. Banter. And now, here's Bob and Dan.
Hey guys and gals, it's Wednesday, and if you're listening, you're probably having a great day. The market went up thousands of points. Tesla went up, Apple went up. It was unbelievable. So today, we all think we're pretty smart. But I've got something special for our listeners today. Very, very special that will go into our YouTube video channel and people can listen to it. We've got a very special person on today that we've been trying to get on for a couple of weeks. Now, he has a very busy schedule. He's on now, and I'm going to just tell you a little bit about him. Then I'm going to say to him to take it over. So today we're talking with Benny, who makes music under the name Muted Circus. I'm going to spell it M-U-T-E-D Circus. I went to the website. He's got some great music there. I love it. Now, Benny is a music producer. He's also a songwriter. He's a multi-instrumentalist and plays violin, viola, guitar, and other instruments, which I guess that could mean any number of things. He is gearing up to release his 10th mini album. Now, he's going to tell us what a mini album is. That's pretty good, 10 mini albums. Now, here's kind of like the nuance. His albums are his way of processing the death of his father. I lost my dad, so I know how hard that is. His dad was a visual artist. And if you go to his website, you will actually see the covers for his albums because his dad did the art for the covers. So, Benny, how are you today?
Good. It's Wednesday. That's right. It's Winsome Wednesday, right?
It's Winsome Wednesday. Benny's caught the vision already. He knows it. Yeah. Yeah, this is a great topic. Benny, I was 35 years old when my dad died. And whatever age you use your dad, it's a piece of your history. So,
Benny, tell us as much as you want to tell us about what you do and about your dad and your whole situation and why, how you got inspired to do this.
Sure. Well, I've always been a music dude. I went to music school. I played in bands in high school. I played instruments, but after college, I lost interest in doing music.
Huh.
And it wasn't until my dad got sick and I was like, oh, all of a sudden you remember, oh, this is why they send you to violin lessons when you're a kid. This is why you get interested in music, because music is such a perfect way to package up emotion and turn it into something. And I've never been an especially visual person. I wasn't going to start painting. So I started to write songs that sort of directly or indirectly tried to encapsulate all the feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And that I kept writing and writing and writing. And it ended up being a lot of songs and instrumental songs and vocal songs. And then I packaged them up into mini albums, which are just, in the olden days, you called them EPs, extended plays.
Right.
Which in my case are 5 songs each. Each one's a little bit of a different theme, and it kind of brought together some songs. So there's been 9 of them, 45 songs in total so far, and there's 5 more.
All written something about your dad or just about your experiences or what?
They're all very directly or indirectly about it. I wrote a lot of songs about parents dying, around children dying, around... just all sorts. I mean, it's not all totally glum. It's pretty glum. It's pretty. It's a downer. It's all genuine and from my heart. So
yeah, and
I'm not like a bummer of a dude. To be honest,
people need that. People need to be in touch with their feelings, and sometimes they listen to your song somewhere in America or in the world. They're listening to that song, and they're getting what I call a Dick Vermeil. You know, Dick Vermeil is a football coach, and he was very emotional. I call it a Dick Vermeil moment. He gets tears in the corner of his eyes when he's hugging a player after they win the Super Bowl, whatever. But you've probably brought a lot of tears and don't even know it.
It's possible.
Well, I have a couple of thoughts on your website. First, did your dad design all of your covers?
Well, so my dad had a very odd career in the 70s. He was very active as an artist. And then he did a similar thing that I did, which was he put other things first over art. And then later in his life, he came back to it. And he couldn't do it for very long because he was diagnosed with terminal cancer and died. But he was very prolific. And so when he passed away, one of the things he wanted was, you know, people want their art to be used and enjoyed in other ways. So I had photos taken of some of the work and I used it as my album art. So posthumously, perhaps he's rolling in his grave. He's been cremated, so he's probably not in a grave. He donated his body to science.
Oh, that's great.
Medical school. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
He's an interesting dude. And, you know, it's funny. It's like when people talk about death and dying, I had a friend who, when my dad died, he told me that some deaths are a tragedy and some deaths are a triumph. And it seems, you know, it's weird. I'm sure you remember this, both of you, when there's death around you, is that people say things, and some of the things they say are such bullshit. And you're just like, cool, thanks. And then sometimes people say things that like stick with you for a long time because you're very vulnerable in that time. Yeah. And he said some deaths, and I believe his mother died in childbirth. And he says that that's a tragedy. And your dad dying in the way he did, that's a triumph. And I was like, how does that make sense? But we, you know, if you, not that I want your listeners to subject you to all 45 songs, bless your soul, if you decide to wait.
A Benny marathon.
Seriously. But around the fourth EP, I actually have a track where it's him talking and I orchestrate him speaking about his own death.
Oh, wow.
And if you listen to it, which if you get that far, but if you listen to it, he's really positive about it. He said it's good. It's good.
When he died?
67.
67.
Almost 68, yeah.
One more thing on your website. Yeah. The first time I went there, which is, I don't know, maybe a week ago, I noticed there's places where you could buy your songs.
Sure, yeah. There's lots of music.
Today I was there, and I could not find that place where you buy your songs.
The website is
mutedcircus.com, right?
Yeah, yeah. I need to update the website anyway. I'll do that. I'll update it all. It'll be great. But you don't need to buy it. You can go to YouTube. You can go to Apple Music. You can go to Spotify. You can write me an email and I'll put them in a zip file and say, I'll put them on a USB stick and I'll mail them to you.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, that's terrific. What I would like to do, and this is kind of like, I don't know how difficult this is that we have people on our show and we have people that write into me, and I'd like to send them a link to your website. Where they could, you know, take a look at the music.
Sure.
Yeah. I'll put it. It'll be right there as people are seeing this. It'll be on this podcast. It'll be.
We could do the band camp, right? Muted Circus. Where's that come from?
Yeah. Yeah. There's some lore around the name. So, you know how all dads are kind of mysterious?
Well, I'm a dad.
Well, I bet your kids probably think you're a little bit mysterious. It's a weird job, Dad.
They think
it's
I'm a weird nerd. Job. Great. My kids are
a weird
nerd, yeah.
It's a weird job, right? How many times are you talking with your kids and then you'll say, well, of course I blah, 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 blah. And they're like, you did what in what year? That's not true. Yeah. And then, you know, so my dad at some point did an art installation that was called Muted Circus. And nobody remembers anything about it, except that somehow black trash bags or black bags were covering the roof of the space.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And he died before anyone just bothered to be like, what's the deal with that? And it was called Muted Circus. So it sort of floated around like family lore, just like two words that kind of stuck together. So it's kind of a weird name. It's kind of mysterious. it has a lot of distance from me because I'm, you know, I'm it's not memorable, like a mysterious though. Guy. Yeah. Hopefully, yeah.
It's memorable.
But anyway, so I called it Muted Circus. And now I'm making a lot more music, and I think I'm probably going to choose a different name because it's not the same kind of sad stew as the Muted Circus project. Yeah. But the name has like a little bit of family lore attached to it. Nobody.
So
quite
family.
Remembers.
So you're when you're. Do you have any brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have a brother and a sister.
When they heard the song, was it emotional for them, or your mom? Is your mom still alive?
My mom's still around. She has a lot of trouble listening to my music, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things where, as you both know, it's very natural to lose your parent.
Yeah.
It's very unnatural to lose someone you've been with for 45 years.
Yeah.
That you've spent your whole adult life with. So I think she, in some ways, even though it's years ago now, she's still recovering or may never recover. She's 70, I don't know, she's 74 now or so.
Now, you don't have to tell us exactly where you are, but are you like on the East Coast or West Coast? Where are you located?
I'm from Southern California, and right now I'm in Brooklyn, New York, where I live.
Brooklyn, New York, right.
Can't you tell I'm a coastal elite?
Not really, no. I guess be a
that was my first thought.
You can't tell by my... You can't tell by my facial hair and curly hair combo or something. There's no. Okay.
Yeah. And Bob and I are a couple of Heartland Hokie guys in the Heartland, you know, just homeboys in Kansas. And so that's good to have you on. It broadens our horizon.
Yeah. You got it. You need. That's right. There aren't enough coastal voices on your.
Yeah. It's good to have a coastal elite on the.
You got to banter. Whatever the biases are that the coastal people bring. My dad was South African and he was raised in South Africa. Yeah. So I always had sort of a little bit of like a international view. My uncles all ended up in Europe. Yeah. So
two things. First, I had an office in South Africa in Johannesburg.
Really?
I had two
cool
people that worked for me there and I would fly down there to see how they were doing. It was several years ago, obviously, but that was my first trip. I always thought the Zulus was going to kick all the white people out, and they have because I was down there. You know, we had all these the Zulus. I mean that positively. I mean they're a tribe of very respectful people. You know, there's 17 million of them down there. But yeah, second thing is I have a friend who looks like you at least on the screen. And he just graduated from University of Maryland with a PhD in math and is doing his fellowship at UCSD. But he's got your same haircut, and he's been traveling. He's been Morocco for a month traveling around. So we get all WhatsApp messages from him, right? And he's with his girlfriend. Now, he's left to go back to the States, and his girlfriend now is backpacking through Europe. She's now in Marseille on her way to Lyon. So I always... under my WhatsApp messages in French. Now,
wait, you said you had how many people working in the South African office?
200. 200. Yeah.
Lot of people. What kind of operation was it down there?
We made centrifugal pumps for the mine. Okay. And so I had to go down in some of the mines. I mean, they were still using canaries in those days. You know, to determine if there was gas, but
that's interesting.
It was a dangerous job for the people, and at the end of the day, they would come up out of the mine and they would go off into the jungle. we didn't a lot of times. Nobody knew where they lived, but they showed up every day and went to work. It was
that's wild.
It was it was an unusual time down there because it was in the days of apartheid, so. When I was there, literally, you had ambulances that picked up the white people and ambulances that picked up the black people. And the day I got there, there's a big headline in the paper, a young boy had got hurt. I was a black boy. And when the ambulance came, it was a white ambulance. They wouldn't take the boy to the hospital.
That's
bingo, awful. He died. I mean, that's horrible when you think about it. But that's the way it was at one time.
Yeah, my dad's family left apartheid South Africa, I think, in 1965. I think it became too much for them to handle.
Yeah, I can understand.
And they moved to Israel, another quite fraught place. And the details are a little bit murky, but the army did not agree with my father and he went to art school in the States. There's a lot more detail in there that we could get into, but
yeah.
So my dad was very, very liberal in the sort of, in the normal sense. Well, not that this moment's weird with like liberal and conservative. It's like, it's just a weird moment, but like growing up, it was very clear. It was like, he believed in actual socialist concepts and stuff like that, you know? So you grew up with that kind of feeling around, but when you talk about his past, it sort of made a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
When you, so when your you dad see was firsthand that kind of oppression.
He was creative. Was your mom a musical? I mean, where did you get, who was your inspiration? Did you have a musical artist or group that inspired you?
Well, inspiration never ends. You know that.
Right.
It just
good
goes
quote.
On.
Ooh, I'm going to put that as a quote on the podcast. Yes. Inspiration never ends. Benny.
Well, I mean, one of the things that always shocks me is people who aren't into music. And I get it. Everyone doesn't have to be into every kind of art form, because when I listen to music, it's so captivating. I can't.
Sure.
I have no, it's just, it's so intoxicating. I have no idea. But when I was a kid, my father is a really big music fan, really big music fan, aesthetically. Like, he loved the way music sound, the way music felt. He listened very widely and very deeply. And my sister is the oldest, and she started playing viola when she was in like fourth grade or something. So she's 6 years older than me. So basically when I was born, there was always her scratching away on her thing. And then 3 years later, my brother started cello. And then I wanted to play viola, but I was a little bit too small because I was only 7 years old. So I started on violin. And basically since then, all the way through to when I was in my early 20s and was like, okay, I've had way too much music in a short amount of time. I'll take a break from it. It was just music all the time. And so I've gone through phases of listening all sorts of stuff. Metal, classical, still I listen to a lot. Jazz I listen to a lot. Classic rock, boring stuff, avant-garde stuff, experimental stuff.
Yeah, I like it all. When I'm in one of my zones, let's say I've got probably a couple thousand songs on my iPhone, and I'll just rip through like 20 different songs, everything from Lady Gaga to Beethoven. You know, I mean, I'll just rip through them, right? Because they all talk to me in a different way. They all inspire me a little differently, right? And I always ask people sometimes, when you're doing your heavy thinking, what music do you listen to?
Yeah,
like when I walk, I'm always listening to country western. That's all there is to it, right? When I'm walking, I go out walking.
Yeah.
I got. But when I'm thinking, I'm usually listening to other kinds of music, right?
Well, let's pause there for a second. Top three country artists.
Toby Keith, Willie Nelson. Okay. Yeah, those are the guys that I listen to a lot. I mean, they're not. Well, Keith Urban. I mean, I like all of them. I'm really kind of a Willie Nelson fan, and I'll tell you why.
I love Willie Nelson. I saw Willie Nelson play this summer.
No kidding.
The guy tells a story. See, all of his songs tell a story.
Yeah.
And so his lyrics are really very good. I don't know if people, I mean, his tunes, his rhythm is okay. He's obviously a good guitar player, but I love his stories and the way he tells them. Yeah. They're just fantastic, you know? Pancho and Lefty. It's just one of the greatest stories. Yeah. And that's why I kind of like country western in a way, because the songs all tell stories and
I agree.
Really upbeat. So I'm a big music.
Pancho and Lefty is a great song, a fantastic song. Have you listened to the Townes Van Zandt version? I think Townes Van Zandt may have written it originally. Yeah.
And
he's got a very different delivery than Willie.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's a little bit more talking. I don't know how to describe it. He doesn't have that kind of like Willy nasally delivery.
Sure.
But yeah, I love country music. I think country music's.
It does always tells a story. Tells a story, as all music does. But country music.
Philharmonic. I mean, when I had an office in London, and my most favorite thing was to go listen to the Royal Philharmonic. Yeah. Because in London, the Royal Philharmonic, you can get in for, you know, a small amount of money. I mean, here, if I go to the Philharmonic, even in Kansas City here, it's like $80 or $100 to get a different, get a good seat.
Yeah, it is expensive.
I love
Bob,
it.
Bob, I think you could swing it. I think you could swing the fee.
Yeah.
If you got you have former offices in London and you have 200 employees in South Africa and during apartheid, I'm pretty sure that you could swing the fee to go to the I know what you mean. There's something funny about like that value exchange. Because here the symphony is also very expensive. And so you it sort of takes the casualness out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you sort of I used to go to the symphony all the time. I used to go to the opera all the time, and I didn't have to pay because I was a kid. My dad paid for everything. Yay. But now I wouldn't have to pay for it myself. I'm like, wow, this is really expensive.
I've been to operas in Australia. I've been to operas in Germany. And so I'm not a big opera fan, but I like the emotion that they elicit,
for sure.
Even though I don't understand the words, but I can feel the emotion. So I like it. But, you know, the other thing about music is that I'll just say this. If I have any regret in my life,
it's that here we go. Dan, you ready?
Like you, and my best job would be to be somewhere in Vail, Colorado, at a bar, sitting on a stool, just playing songs to everybody there. That was my dream.
A piano or a guitar or what instrument?
A guitar and a harmonica, the whole thing. A harmonica with a guitar, sitting on a stool, playing really good songs for people, you know?
Bob, I got good news for you. There's a bar in Vail just waiting for you. Now, this is the prime time for you. The moment. Yeah.
He's a very winsome guy. Benny, you're a very winsome guy. You're interested. The eye of winsome is interested. The N is in be a nurturer. The S is be a solutioner. You've given him interest and a solution how to get what he wanted in his childhood.
But Dan, you and I both know this. Whenever someone says my one, the whole thing, Bob is someone that got an incredible amount of stuff done in Bob's life. And if Bob prioritized learning how to play guitar and harmonica, it would have been done.
You may have inspired him.
I still think about it, but let me ask you this. Now our recordings go out. We put them on YouTube. We have people that listen to them religiously. I actually take the audio. I put the audio on a podcast on iTunes. My question to you is, what can we do to help you with your mission?
Man, first you got to figure out what the mission is. I actually feel like one song deeply listened to quietly is what I would want. And it doesn't even matter which one. Some of my songs are really, I think they're really good. Some of them I don't think are that great, but I can't really choose which one's which. Some of them are instrumental and some of them are vocal. Doesn't really matter so much.
Do you have one of people that have listened, like fans or friends or family, that they go, that's your best song?
I think instrumental one, there's one called Scars that somehow people really like. It just sounds like a S-C-A-R-S. And then vocal one, that's tricky because my favorite ones aren't exactly the ones that other people think are the favorite. Mm-hmm. So maybe we could put a rain check in that one. But I think the Scars one is interesting. I play strings, violin, and viola. And what I was, the sort of process for getting these together was time alone, quiet space. I'd mic things up and I would improvise. And that's all composition generally comes from improvisation because you have to.
Can you email Bob? You have his email, webtalkwithbob@gmail.com. Send him an MP3 of that. And at the end of our podcast, I'll, as a tribute to your dad, I'll put a cover that he did. Those are up there on the website, I believe, covers. Right? And we'll just, because our podcast, hey, if people can listen for 40 minutes, they can listen to 3 minutes or 4 minutes of your song.
Sure,
just close their eyes and be listening to Benny MutedCircus.com.
Yeah.
Folks, you're listening to Banter. And
I can send you a track, an unreleased track that's coming out in my last EP. That one's nice. It's the final song of all 10.
Wow, we would be the world premiere.
You would probably be the world.
The world premiere. Banter presents world premiere. Muted Circus Benny releases it.
Yeah, and then what's going to happen is I'll release it, and then I'll get a copyright takedown notice. They'll be like, I think this is owned by Banter with Bob and Dad. Sorry. And then we'll have to fight it out.
Yeah, it is funny how they track all that stuff.
I also was interested in your titles. I'm trying to remember,
sure.
There were a couple that really stuck in my brain. I can't remember what they were, but name some of your titles. I want to see.
Oh, I got all sorts of weird ones, like Hear My Rattle. Vesuvial
That's the one.
Thirst.
That's the one. Where did that come from? Hear My Rattle.
So there's a gentleman whose profession is to record nature sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And he's based in California.
Yeah.
And I'll pull up his name in a second.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing the thing that people do on the internet, and I came across a website with rattlesnake sounds.
Hmm.
Really? And it was just pictures of rattlesnakes, and you click a little button and it would play the sound that the rattlesnake made.
Hmm.
And I don't know how much time I spent on the site, but I was like clicking and being like, oh my gosh, this whatever rattle, that's so interesting. That's so interesting. So I had an idea. I was like, you know what? I want to grab these sounds and I want to make a song that uses these rattlesnake sounds. But because I'm not a thief, I contacted the nature recordist and I asked him, like, hey, can I use these rattlesnake sounds? And he actually emailed me back. He was super nice. And he said, like, sure. His name is Jeff Rice. That's his name.
There you go. Jeff will be happy.
Ecosystemsound.com. He's a fantastic artist as well and a sound recordist. And so I was working on this album that each song is a sort of different take on love. And there's three vocal songs. This is where everyone who's listening, their eyes sort of roll a little bit. Three songs about love. One is from the perspective of rattlesnakes, which spend almost all their time alone. And I think that rattlesnakes, they spend all their time alone, and then they have a huge orgy. Don't quote me on that, but like that's the sort of weirdness of a rattlesnake.
This is so more like, breaking news here.
So it's like, I'm a rattlesnake, and I use the rattlesnake sounds with Jeff's permission. Like, okay. Then there's an interlude, which is called Vesuvial Thirst. Then there's another song that's a fictional, important song about a boy who falls in love with his therapist.
Yeah. Okay.
And so it goes deep on this like sort of, I don't know how to describe it. It's sort of like the boy is in love with his therapist, and the boy is manipulating the things that the boy is saying in order to get the therapist to like them. And the therapist is just being the therapist. So it's not clear if there's any relationship at all, or if it's all just inside this boy's brain. That's the third track.
Wow.
Everyone follows so far.
And you can paint that picture with words and music. That's good.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually very little. It's called In the Chair. And it's about like how the boy thinks that the fact that the therapist wants him to stay in therapy is a sign that the therapist loves him. You can check it out if you're interested.
Interesting.
Then the final track is called My Mona Lisa. Uh-huh. And it documents all the ways that people have attacked or tried to abuse the Mona Lisa.
Throw paint on it.
Exactly. And also, you know, the story, according to the internet, is that the reason why the Mona Lisa became famous was that in the early 1900s, it was stolen. And so it was front page news as they were trying to track down the thieves, and they eventually recovered the Mona Lisa. And so it's a kind of an odd thing because it's such a weird painting, a weird smirk. And like, it's just, anyway, so it captured everyone's imagination. So I sort of wrote a song about that kind of weird quirks that people have that capture your imagination. And so it's called My Mona Lisa. And that's one EP. Five tracks, two interludes. That's my ninth EP.
Interesting, right? So have you made enough money in the music business to make it an income?
No way.
No way. I'm just curious.
No, but that's okay. You know, it's funny. Yeah. It's like there's, you can get incredibly lucky, and that would be cool.
Yeah, one saw it.
Yeah, could.
A movie. I mean, I could see a movie about a family or a son losing his dad, tearjerker movie, and they pick it up and it becomes a team.
That said, the way that most music people, like I went to music school, I have my degree in music. My friends that went on to do music full time, one, they're way better musicians than I am. That's okay. They're way better, meaning they can play more genres, more styles, more consistently. They can wake up at 2 a.m. and be on stage at 2:05 a.m. and absolutely, you know, like those professionals. A lot of them do film scoring. They do commercial music. They tour. They direct bands. They can arrange. They can do all these things. If I really wanted to make a living with music, I could probably get it done with what I know, string playing and other stuff. That's just not me. I love to tinker with music, and I love to write, and I love to be like, yeah, I'll write a song about a boy who falls in love with this therapist and not think, is this commercial? Is this going to, that's like one step too far for me. I really lose interest very quickly.
I'm in agreement with you. I can only say from experience that the people that I know that are really, let's say, did something great, whatever field they were in, they never were thinking about how many people would like it. They were just thinking about, did they like it? Was it something they wanted to do, right?
Yeah.
And I could give you 4 hours of examples from Steve Jobs at Apple to people that I know somewhat in the music business. But the people that wrote to satisfy themselves had a better chance of hitting something that worked than people that wrote to, I'm going to write something, you know, so good that everybody will love it, right? Like happy birthday
for sure
would be something.
Are we gonna transition this to talk about how Dan made the whole Winsome brand, because Dan needed the Winsome brand to support Dan in some way? Is this where we're gonna?
I'm not getting rich, but I think I have I'm the only Winsomeologist. If you Google Winsomeologist, I'm the only Winsomeologist in the world. It's the study of winsome people.
Wow.
So there you go. I got that going for me.
I was looking at your website, and you know, I liked it a lot. So I'm going to preface this by saying
it's a little wordy. We're working on that.
My friend's father used to say that when people are talking to you, they're looking for the bozo switch. Have you ever heard this phrase?
No, this is good stuff.
So people say things. They'll be like talking, and you're having a back and forth. And then they'll say something that's so dumb that it switched. You go, oh, you're a bozo. I didn't realize that until now. And it could be like 5 minutes. It could be 10 minutes. But it's like, oh.
You know, if people listen to banter, Bob calls me a bozo like 4 or 5 times a program, every podcast.
But anyway, so when I was reading your website, and usually when I'm like, there's motivational stuff, I'm like, okay, it's cool. Okay. And then you hit something and you're just like, oh boy. But I didn't get any bozo switches.
I didn't have the no bozo switch website.
I was like, this is legit. Like, this makes sense to me. These are all things you got to win the day. And you know, what's funny. It's like, I actually think about stuff like this. The 30 seconds before a phone call with someone, I'll think, how are you going to like win this? And if you're on a call with someone like in business or whatever, and things are going kind of south, something switches and I become a motivational speaker like Dan. No, I'm like, I understand suddenly, oh, we need to recover this, because it doesn't have to be negative. We can both lose and still win. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
We can both be upset.
You are an inspiring person. I enjoy listening to you.
We got
to
have you back on. We got to have you back on banter.
But I'm going to ask you the thing I ask all musicians I know. My musician question is, why is there 88 keys on the piano?
Oh, man. Well, I believe that Bossendorfer has made an 89 key piano, but we can set that aside.
Wow.
Why are there 88 keys in the piano?
Great question.
I don't know the answer, by the way.
I could ask Google. Hey, Google, why are there 88 keys in the piano?
How far people could reach? You know, that's like as far as we could reach in the sides.
So the reason for the 88 keys on the piano.
But you know, from a, I'm a big believer that people that are into music make good technical people. They make good programmers because they understand chords and relationships. One of the guys that does all the programming, I was just talking before I got in this with you, I was talking to the guy that does my programming work for me. He's a musician. He's a singer. He's a piano player. His whole family are piano players. I don't know if he can play the violin, but he's, you know, he's an accomplished, not just a regular piano player. Yeah. He's like an accomplished musician, his family is, and he's an excellent programmer. And years ago, you may not, this is before your time, but IBM was hiring programmers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they look for was musicians, people that played the piano. They feel if you know chords, you can know relationships, and that's programming.
I think that checks out to a certain extent. I think that part of it has to do with overcoming very serious, formidable frustration every second. Because it's really unnatural to play an instrument. It's a very unnatural thing to like wiggle your fingers and make sound. And so you just can't wing it. You just have to do it. You just have to be like, I am going to wade through this muck until I can play this thing. And if you're the type that gets frustrated easily, you'll never get through it. And I think programmers largely have that same kind of attitude where it's like, not how it's going to be solved. Well, that's not how it's going to be solved. And yeah, you can build skills and it can get faster and easier, but there's always something really hard to do that you have to overcome. So I think it might have to do with more of the mentality of just
the way their brain works.
Chipping away.
I think it's the way I once heard, maybe Bob, I don't know if you told me this, or we talked about this, but Google looks for people that were in marching band in high school or college because they can see a stream of notes and that may helps them follow a stream of code.
I think that's probably true. I mean, I was in a marching band.
I was in marching band too.
I was in a marching band and it was a lot of fun. That's all I can tell you. And I started taking piano lessons when I was very young. The woman two doors up the street from where I lived was an accomplished pianist. She'd been around the world. Now she was retired, lived by herself. So she started giving me lessons on the piano. But in those days, guys that played the piano didn't go very far with the girls. You know, that's what
mom said, that's right? Not what my mom said. My mom, I took piano lessons 3 years. She says, when you get to college, if you're sitting around and you're playing the piano, girls are going to flock to you.
Yeah, just maybe, Google people gathered around a piano.
You're younger than I am, see? But yeah, but now you're right. Now today, if you can walk into a group and play the piano or the guitar, you can be the center of attention. But, and I'm not saying you want to be the center of the attention, but sometimes it's fun to be the center of attention, right? And to have a skill. But to me, the beauty of the piano or the guitar or the violin is that you've mastered a skill which gives you confidence to do other kinds of things.
Yeah.
So I look at mastering a skill.
I think there's something to that, to the transfer ability. I think that some personality types don't lend themselves to that particular kind of frustration. But I've always had the feeling in almost everything I do that the natural state is rejection. And I mean, it sounds like you're accomplished in business endeavors.
He's a serial entrepreneur.
Serial entrepreneur is rejection.
Yeah, I really believe that. Right. Like, for example, if you and I were talking about starting a new business,
right?
If the market was just waiting with open arms for us, somebody else would already be in the arms of the market. It would already be solved. So you sort of have to be like, okay, well, the natural state is the world does not need my business, does not need my ability. Nothing will happen if I never learn to play the tuba. Like that's not gonna, whatever. But there's something that an entrepreneur or a musician or someone sees as worthy of overcoming. And that's all up here, right? It's in the brain. It has nothing to do with the reality.
Yeah.
You, Speaking of rejection, I'll tell you, it's tied to marching band and rejection. It's kind of a tear-jerking story, and then I'll tell you a motivational thing tied to it.
Go ahead.
I'm a freshman in a little town in Nebraska, David City, Nebraska.
Okay.
And you got to play in the band when you're a freshman. So I'm in the band. I wanted to play the drums. My parents said, no, not all that noise around the house. Play the trumpet. So they rented me a trumpet. So I'm playing a trumpet. So then it's time for parent-teacher conferences. Here comes the emotional rejection. So Skip called. God bless him. He's probably in heaven today. Skip called the band director. We go into the band room, my parents, and Skip calls, says to my parents, right in front of me, Mr. and Mrs. Snell, I think Danny should stick to sports because he's an athlete and he can't play the trumpet worth a darn. So you should probably not keep paying for the trumpet.
Wow.
Crushed me, but it inspired me later in life. And so my daughter, Mandy, was in marching band and became a drum major. 2 years.
Wow.
2 years drum major in high school. So he was up there Amazing. Directing 100 and
yeah,
some
of
people.
Course.
Then in college, she went on and she was 3 years, drum major 3 years. So 5 years drum major. So I helped with fundraising. But I put up this and I told the band every year. And this is for you two band players and every band, everybody that was ever in a marching band, tell your kids this, tell your grandkids, no great victory ever happened on a football field ever without the marching band first playing.
Agreed.
The national anthem.
I feel like you two should launch a side YouTube quest where Dan learns how to play the trumpet and we all watch Dan learn how to
play. And Bob plays a guitar. We got a trumpet and a guitar.
This is very interesting. So we usually try to wind these down a bit. We'd like to have you back, but because this is kind of an inspirational. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's more than just a song. It's not just a song, a man and his songs. It's we've been motivated. We've been encouraged. We've laughed.
Yeah.
We've had father-son stories.
Click on one before we terminate. Can you click on a song and just play it a little bit of it?
Well, he's going to send it to you, and I can play it. I can plug it in.
Let's do it now. Then
I have to make him – wait a minute. I have to make him a co-host.
Sing it a cappella. No, you just can sing it.
Oh, God. There, you're the co-host now. Ben, if you want to
co-host.
You're co-host, okay. So you can share if you want to share.
All right. Let's see. Can we get it to play music?
I think so. If you on share, you click on share, the green there.
Yeah, let me see.
And then go up to the top and make sure you turn the sound on.
Okay, we'll give it a shot.
We'll see.
Let's see. Let me.
If not, through the wonders of technology, I can say, and now, ladies and gentlemen, here's that song because you're going to send it to Bob and I can
if he just clicks on it, we'll all hear it.
Potentially.
It's not that simple, Bob. He's got to share it and he's got to turn on sound, share sound. There's a lot of things going. It's not as easy as like me eating. I've been waiting to eat my peanut butter here.
It's okay. We gotta remember Bob's been a CEO a while.
Yeah, he's a CEO. He's not a guy that's down in
a while. Bob's used to just people making it happen. You know what I mean?
I love this. This is banter. Usually I'm doing this. Bob, you're being tag teamed on. Okay. Benny, boom.
You know, get it, Dan. I consider all that to be a compliment.
There you go. Now we're sharing. Okay, here we go.
So these are all my instrumental songs in a playlist called Instrumental Laments. Yeah. And this is a very sad song that will bring
scars.
Out the... Yeah, this is... Yeah. Can you hear it?
Yes.
I like it.
Oh, sorry. I lost it for a second.
Haunting melody.
can see it. It's a movie soundtrack by Benny Rubin. And now the Oscar goes.
Yeah, give me an Oscar.
That's and now great. The Oscar goes to Benny Rubin. I like it.
Yeah.
So, Dan, let's we've taken some good amount of time from Benny.
Hey, what happened to my video feed?
Again?
I don't know. It disappeared.
That's weird.
How do we? Okay.
I didn't do anything.
Take us home, Dan.
Well, folks, you've been listening to Banter with Bob and Dan. Usually, because we have a special guest, you see, Benny Rubin, MutedCircus.com. You see his website right here on the screen even as we're talking. Yeah. And you're going to hear his song here. Great to have a guest like Benny because it gets people thinking. And sometimes Bob and I banter, but sometimes we're touched and we learn and we're moved to think bigger than ourselves by somebody like Benny. So, Benny, thank you.
Thank you both. It's super fun.
Fun to have on.
Yeah, send me a note and I'll come back on.
And, folks, be sure and like this, share it. Share it with your friends. Share it with a bunch of people and say, hey, listen to this guy, Benny Rubin, MutedCircus.com.
I want to make Benny Rubin famous.
Yeah, let's make Benny Rubin famous.
He's already famous in some group. I want to expand his famous bubble.
That's cool. I'll come to wherever you are. We'll do a show.
All right. Okay, let's
promote a show.
Great. Benny, thanks a lot. Hey, guys and gals, thanks very much for tuning in. Email us if you have something you want us to talk about. And if you have a big complaint, don't email us. We don't really mean it.
Bye, everyone. Thanks
so much. Great to be with everybody. Bye. Stay winsome out there.